episode. We're ready?
Now we're ready.
Those fingers mean that we're recording?
Those fingers mean finger gun.
So it means we're recording?
Yes.
So this is for posterity then?
No. This is for whatever.
For posteriors?
Sure. All right. Let's not end up with this as the intro this week.
Okay. Let's do our best.
All right.
Okay.
I'll do a better job editing.
Ahem. Episode 701, Randolph Carter. Series 7, Episode 1 of 11. Written and edited by Daniel Spitzer. Audio by Seraphie and Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective. We are engaged in an ongoing discussion of the Cthulhu mythos and its timeline regarding Earth. To be part of it, contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join us on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for PGTTCM. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to PGTTCM on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. Donate to patreon.com/pgttcm and get something cool each month. Early release episodes, unique audio content, otherwise unreleased banter, and our ever-popular sticker cult are just a few of the options. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com and FoundItemClothing.com. Hey, keep your feet warm and cute this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from BunnySlippers.com and get your favorite screen-accurate shirts from your favorite films from FoundItemClothing.com. Greetings, listeners. It is we, D.B. Spitzer and Sarah Fee, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits, like the dreamlands or things of a weird nature, or things that are Lovecraftian-leaning. Once more, we head into those dark woods, further feeling those malevolent forces upon us. Once again, we walk down the lightless stone staircase in the middle of nowhere. Check out the show's merch table at pgttcm.threadless.com. You can find lots of cool shirts and mugs and stuff there, all original designs by D.B. Spitzer. Banter yay!
Banter yay!
Banter yay!
All right, cool. Let's go and banter starting now.
Okay.
Hey, so crazy weather we're having right now.
I know, right? I thought it was spring. I seriously thought it was spring.
Well, it's almost spring, but...
I mean, like, we had, 3 weeks of no rain?
Yeah.
Which is crazy in the Northwest here.
Yeah.
It's just, like, ridiculous to have that in January.
Yeah, no rain, like the Blind Melon song. And right now, we've got, snow.
Yeah.
It's like, snow.
It's, like, it's gonna be, 3 inches of snow, they say.
Yeah.
Especially on your neck.
Wow.
Of the woods.
Yeah. Do you remember that song from the 90s? Inform by Snow? Album 12 Inches of Snow. Have we talked about this before?
No, we have not.
All right. Anyway.
12 Inches of Snow, you say?
Yeah. Canadian rapper. Canadian rapper by the name of Snow.
I remember Snow and his whole weird grossness.
Inform. Yep. Anyway. So it's snowing here. It's,
yeah.
Like, we have to get this done quick so you can go pick up kids so that
not have to
stranded
get
at school.
Stuck at school. Yeah, we had early closing.
Yeah,
it's like I was you woke up and saw the snow. And generally, when it snows here in Portland, the schools close.
Yeah,
they just close.
Yeah,
it's like, was there a flurry? Did you see a flake?
Yeah.
Quick, no school, but we have a new superintendent who's the person who makes the call.
Mm-hmm.
And this superintendent is not from Portland.
Yeah.
And the biggest change that happens there is that people who are not from Portland don't understand how crazy people get when it snows in Portland.
Yeah.
Because they're all like, what? It's a little bit of snow. Unless they're from California or Florida.
Yeah.
Somewhere else where it doesn't snow.
Yeah. Hey, I know that you once lived in Eugene, as I did.
Yes.
Did you live in Eugene at any point in time where it snowed?
Oh, yeah.
But they didn't have the snowplows because they were on loan to Portland?
No, I don't remember that particular incident, fact, but I do remember the year that it snowed right before school started again during winter break.
Uh-huh.
And it snowed, and then it iced, and then it snowed on top of that.
Yeah.
So you'd have like a layer of snow crunched down through that, and then like a layer of ice, and then that would break, and then there was snow underneath it, so there's zero stable footing.
2004?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was
and
in
you
Portland.
You know what?
What?
The university still didn't close.
Yeah.
Just you had to skip classes.
Yeah. When I was in Minnesota, they wouldn't.
Do tell.
They wouldn't close school for anything except for like tornadoes.
Maybe rain. Sometimes places where it snows regularly close for
yeah.
rain.
No. Flooding and tornadoes, because it would flood like mm-hmm. right in around March when all the snow would melt, or a lot of snow would melt.
Yeah, but in Minnesota, let's be clear. In Minnesota, if they closed for snow, there would be no school.
Exactly. Anyway, so snow.
Yeah.
Weather.
It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. So this episode, we're going to be talking about Randolph Carter.
I was going to see if there's anything that you've been watching or anything like that lately that you want to like be like, hey, I've been watching this, or I've been listening to this new podcast.
I've been watching Riverdale.
Yeah. How's that?
I would call it way more interesting than any other Archie thing I've ever watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I never got an impression that Archie was heavy on the plot.
Yeah.
Archie comics, they're always like, hey, do you want to date Betty or Veronica?
Reggie's a dickhead.
Yeah.
Look at Jughead. He's a goofball.
He's such a goofball. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So this, like, this whole, like, who killed this guy, the whole, like, what about this girl thing is actually pretty engaging.
Yeah, no, it feels like,
But it also feels weird. It's like watching the My Little Ponies solve a murder mystery.
I was thinking it's like they dumped the Archie characters into the world of Twin Peaks.
Yes.
And took out all the, like, really, really surreal David Lynch transcendental meditation-induced... day hallucinations.
Yeah.
I've got a really good idea.
Yeah.
They're gonna dress as rabbits.
But it is like there was a murder in a small town and we gotta figure out who it is, and
exactly.
It could be anybody, and is the sheriff even
innocent,
not corrupt?
Small town.
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of I would say that it's great late night right before bed watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the show to fall asleep to.
Yeah, that and
GGBO.
What is the name of that show?
Okay, well, so in England it's called The Great British Bake Off.
Okay.
But in the States we call it The Great British Baking Show because Bake Off is trademarked.
Okay, all
right. That's right. We live in that world.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, did you know that Gene Simmons of Kiss owns the copyright to the image of a dollar symbol on a bag of money?
No.
Yeah.
Who could... I mean, that's like saying that you own the right to how a child draws the sun.
Yeah, or happy birthday. Oh, wait a minute. Someone owned the rights to that until just recently.
Oh, really? Is that why it suddenly is all over
the Hill
TV?
Yeah, Sisters or whoever they were.
I remember...
No longer...
That I knew that was the case, that happy birthday had rights to it, which is crazy. But they are no longer with us,
yeah,
are they?
Yeah, it's now considered public domain.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So no longer do we have to suffer
Happy birthday.
He's a jolly good fellow. Weird. Or like, yay, everybody just sang this song. Woohoo, here's your candles. It's like a cultural touchstone. Anyway. I believe in intellectual property rights. They're important too.
I believe in the public domain and it should be mine for everything it can.
Well, that as well, yes. Yes, but the intellectual property rights belonged to those people in the past.
Certainly.
But, look, Lovecraft's non-existent children don't need to live off of his, you know, monies forever.
Nope.
We should be able to use his creativity now as a source for our creativity.
Exactly. Just like, hey, let's go with property rights some more and creative rights some more. Just like Disney kind of, takes things from, like, the public domain.
Right, like
and
Snow
then
White.
Pulls them and Disneyfies them. And then is like, you can't touch our stuff. Don't mess with Disney. Disney's original. Disney's a creator. And it's just, well, you took a bunch of stuff from the public domain.
Right.
Made some stuff. And then said, you can't play with our toys.
That's right. It's like they said, it's like they took toys out of the toy box and taped them together. And then we're like, yeah, don't touch our stuff.
Yeah. And pretty much the whole reason why our copyrights are the way that they are in America currently, you have to wait 75 years after the death of an artist is because of Disney.
Yeah. That's bullshit. Because they don't want to lose Mickey Mouse. It's like if we just all agreed not to make Mickey Mouse fuck anything.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm gonna put the blame right on Underground Comics right now. If they hadn't made Mickey Mouse fuck stuff in the 60s.
Did they? Oh, is that why?
If they hadn't made Donald Duck like do drugs and stuff like that. Those damn hippies with their underground comics, well, ruining everything.
Look, what, this is 60s is like
everyone should have just stuck to reading their Bibles.
Almost 60 years ago.
All right, and enough with banter.
Yay!
Yay!
Randolph Carter is a recurring character in several stories by H.P. Lovecraft.
Ever hear of the guy?
The character first appears in The Statement of Randolph Carter, a short story Lovecraft wrote in 1919 based on one of his dreams. An American magazine called The Vagrant published the story in May of 1920. Carter shares many of Lovecraft's personal traits. He is an uncelebrated author whose writings are seldom noticed. A melancholy figure, Carter is a quiet, contemplative dreamer with a sensitive disposition, prone to fainting during times of emotional stress. But he can also be courageous with enough strength of mind and character to face and foil the horrific creatures of the dreamlands. Our protagonist is in the following stories. The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, which is on my reading list for next week.
Some of them stole off to those cryptic realms which are known only to cats, and which villagers say are on the moon's dark side. Whither the cats leap from tall housetops, but one small black kitten crept upstairs and sprang in Carter's lap to purr and play and curled up near his feet when he lay down at last on the little couch whose pillows were stuffed with fragrant, drowsy herbs.
One of Lovecraft's longest tales follows Carter for several months searching for the lost city of his dreams. The story reveals Carter's familiarity with much of Lovecraft's fictional universe. Carter is also shown to possess considerable knowledge of the politics and geography of the dream world and has allies there. After an elaborate odyssey, Carter awakens in his Boston apartment with only a fleeting impression of the dream world he left behind, though he now knows what the lost city actually is. The Statement of Randolph Carter is narrated in flashback by Carter.
The place was an ancient cemetery. So ancient that I trembled at the manifold signs of immemorial years. It was a deep, damp hollow overgrown with rank grass, moss, and curious creeping weeds, all filled with a vague stench which my idle fancy associated absurdly with rotting stone. And on every hand there were signs of neglect and decrepitude, and it seemed haunted by the notion that Warren and I were the first living creatures to invade the lethal silence in centuries.
While being interrogated by the police, who suspect him of murdering Harley Warren, Carter and his friend Harley Warren investigate a mysterious crypt in an ancient abandoned cemetery. Warren believed the crypt may contain evidence that could confirm some of his speculations. Details of these speculations are never revealed, but it is said that Warren recently read a mysterious book written in an unknown language about the incorruptibility of the dead. Upon reaching the cemetery, Carter and Warren uncover the crypt by lifting an immense granite slab, revealing a set of stone steps leading downward into the earth. Warren insists that Carter remain at the surface. He descends the steps alone, but remains in communication with Carter via a portable telephone set. Shortly thereafter, he tells Carter that he has discovered a monstrous, unbelievable secret, and pleads with his companion to replace the stone and run for his life. When Carter asks what he has found, his queries are initially met with silence, and then by the voice of an unknown entity who informs them
that Warren is dead.
The story is almost verbatim from one of Lovecraft's nightmares, but with minor changes like the name Lovecraft to Warren. The unnameable.
It had been an eldritch thing. No wonder sensitive students shudder at the Puritan age in Massachusetts. So little is known of what went on beneath the surface, so little yet such a ghastly festering as it bubbles up putrescently in occasional ghoulish glimpses. The witchcraft terror is a horrible ray of light on what was stewing in men's crushed brains, but even that is a trifle. There was no beauty, no freedom. We can see from the architectural and the household remains that the poisonous sermons of the cramped divines, and inside that rusted iron straitjacket lurked gibbering, hideousness, perversion, and diabolism. Here truly was the apotheosis of the unnameable.
Begins with Carter in conversation with his friend Joe Manton, principal of a New England high school, discussing the supposedly mythical creature that bears the story's name. The tale is set in a 17th century cemetery as evening falls. Initially, Manton is skeptical and ridicules Carter for thinking that such a being may be possible. As darkness encroaches and as Carter's description to become more detailed and supported by facts, his flippant dismissal gradually gives way to fear. The two are attacked by the monster but survive the experience. The unnameable is notable for containing extensive quoted dialogue between the characters, something which Lovecraft scarcely used at all in the rest of his fiction. There is some question as to whether the unnameable's protagonist is in fact Randolph Carter. He is named only as Carter and described as an author of weird fiction. An oblique reference to this incident is found in The Silver Key. The Silver Key.
Wonder had gone away, and he had forgotten that life is only a set of pictures in the brain, among which there is no difference betwixt those born of real things and those born of inward dreamings, and no cause to value one above the other.
Perhaps the most overtly philosophical of Lovecraft's fiction finds Carter entering middle age and losing his key to the gate of dreams. No longer is Carter able to escape the mundane realities of life and enter the Lovecraftian dream world that alone has given him happiness. Wonder is gone, and he has forgotten the fact that life is nothing more than a set of mental images, where there is no fundamental distinction between dreams and reality, and no reason to value one above the other. In an attempt to recover his lost innocence, Carter returns to his childhood home and finds a mysterious silver key, which allows him to enter a cave and magically emerge again in the year 1883 as a child, full of wonder, dreams, and happiness. He remains in this condition until 1928, when he again disappears, presumably having found a way to transcend space and time and travel in other dimensions. Through the gates of the Silver Key.
He was told how childish and limited is the notion of a tri-dimensional world, and that an infinity of directions there are besides the known direction of up and down, forward, backward, left and right. He was shown the smallness of tinsel emptiness of the little earth gods, with their petty human interests and connections, their hatreds, their rages, their loves and vanities, the craving for praise and sacrifice, and the demand for faith contrary to reason and nature.
Written in collaboration with Lovecraft admirer E. Hoffman Price, details Carter's adventures in another dimension where he encounters a more primordial version of himself, implied to be Yog-Sothoth, who explains that Carter, and indeed all beings, are ultimately nothing more than manifestations of a greater being. Carter's mind ends up trapped in the body of an alien, another facet of the higher being. The investigation into Carter's disappearance takes place 4 years later in 1932. Out of Eons by Lovecraft and Hazel Heald.
I recalled one very strange character appeared during November. A dark, turbaned, and bushily bearded man with a labored, unnatural voice, curiously expressionless face, clumsy hands covered with absurd white mittens, who gave a squalid West End address and called himself Swami Chandrabhutra. This fellow was unbelievably erudite in occult lore and seemed profoundly and solemnly moved by the resemblance of the hieroglyphs on the scroll to certain signs and symbols of a forgotten elder world about which he professed vast intuitive knowledge.
features a brief 1931 appearance by Carter. While trapped in the alien body, he visits a museum exhibiting an ancient mummy from a long-forgotten civilization and recognizes some of the writing on the scroll that accompanies it. Randolph Carter is an antiquarian and one-time student of the fictional Miskatonic University. He was probably born around 1874 and grew up in and around Boston. He is the descendant of Sir Randolph Carter, who had studied magic during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I of England. Sir Randolph had then emigrated to America, and his son Edmund Carter later had to flee the Salem witch trials. Carter also had an ancestor involved in one of the Crusades, who was captured by the Muslims and learned wild secrets from them. Lovecraft's character may have been based on a real-life Randolph Carter, who was a scholar at Christ's College in the University of Cambridge. From 1892 to 1895, Carter took his Part 1 Typos in Oriental Studies, Arabic, and his Part 2 in Egyptology. While at Cambridge, he was an acquaintance of Sir James George Frazer, author of The Golden Bough. Carter's whereabouts after Cambridge are unclear, but like his fictional namesake, he may have used the French Foreign Legion as a route to exploring the North African deserts. College records do not indicate whether Carter was a U.S. or British citizen.
We move into place.
Yeah, a banter, man.
All right. So, okay, so we have Randolph Carter.
Yeah, so Randolph Carter.
Yeah.
Obviously a Lovecraftian stand-in.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, like, do you think that Lovecraft wishes that he could have found a silver key to travel through time and space?
I believe Lovecraft did wish that he could find a key to travel back in time, to travel back to being 9 years old, sometime of simplicity when his mother was alive, possibly, and his grandfather was alive, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When his family still had a fortune and he had a huge house full of books.
Who wouldn't want that?
Who wouldn't want that?
But childhood is such a rosy time anyway, and
certainly.
On top of that, if your life was also more financially secure and full of love, then
Yeah. But Randolph Carter is supposed to be a stand-in for Lovecraft, even though Carter is kind of based off of someone else, which we just kind of briefly touched on, like a real person.
So yeah, based on maybe a real person, or maybe like Lovecraft's idealization of a real person.
It's nice that Lovecraft does have, like, this is the closest Lovecraft has to a regular protagonist. This is like the closest, like, you know, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle had Sherlock Holmes.
Uh-huh.
And Robert E. Howard had Conan the Barbarian.
Uh-huh,
and,
uh-huh.
You know, various people have their main character, and
right.
Like Randolph Carter is like Lovecraft's
main
reoccurring
character.
Main character, like, you know, star protagonist.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you have cool people like Henry Armitage in the Dunwich Horror, but he only appears in one.
Uh-huh.
And Professor Wilmerth appears, like, briefly in At the Mountains of Madness, like, warning them of what they know not of with the Necronomicon before they go down to the Antarctic.
Uh-huh,
yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway. But, Carter. Randolph Carter.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to be reading the statement of Randolph Carter. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
I've been reading a book called Priestess, which is a book of erotica based on the mythos.
Oh, yeah, that's from Martian Migraine Press.
Yeah.
I think that was edited by...
Scott R. Jones.
Edited by Scott R. Jones.
Yeah. So in Priestess, there's a long section where a woman is being interrogated by some police in Prague, and I can't wait to see what the similarities are. I mean, I'm sure that one of these stories would be better written than the other, but I can't wait to find out. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Yeah. No, we covered Priestess, I think, in third season, and I talked about how ultra unvanilla it was. Just kind of like
Yeah.
Read at your own
peril, for yeah. sure.
You know, if a village having ritualistic sex turned into a giant flesh
worm. Hey, I already said that part.
You know, is your cup of tea?
Oh, then, yeah, cup of tea.
Then definitely check it out. This is, you know, unofficial commercial again for Priestess. Because Scott R. Jones, Martian Migraine Press, Justine Joffreys, all cool people. So, mm-hmm. you know, we want to support the arts.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you want to support the arts, check out patreon.com/PGTTCM.
Yay!
We've got a new Patreon schema.
Woohoo!
We've got multiple levels of donations, and different levels have different things. Mm-hmm. And we have one for innocent bystanders, people who just kind of want an early episode, little bits and pieces of stuff here mm-hmm. and there. We've got one for cultists, people who want cool stickers and want to get all the cool free mm-hmm. stuff that we're going to be kicking out. And we've got one for cult leaders, and that one is specifically for people who want to get RPG stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff for the role-playing game things that I'm going to be kicking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, maps, whatnot. And then we're going to have one for...
Necromancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the sticker scheme and the t-shirt scheme.
T-shirt scheme. Sticker scheme, t-shirt scheme, and a little extra. Yeah, no, cult leader, stickers, t-shirts, and cultist is the one that you get the RPG stuff, and investigator is the sticker club.
Yeah,
so
they all roll together.
Yeah.
Like, they keep rolling.
Innocent bystander, bare bones,
yeah.
$1. Investigator, $5. Cultist, $15. Cult leader, $25.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Necromancer?
$50.
$50, but you also get cool prints and stuff.
Right,
like that.
This is per month.
Per month.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/PGTTCM. PGTTCM.threadless.com to check out our cool t-shirt store.
Yeah.
And help support.
If you just want one t-shirt yeah. instead of a t-shirt.
Instead of being part of a t-shirt club, you just mm-hmm. want to get, you know, a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. All right.
The key. I do not know what windings in the waste of those strange sea lanes brought me home once more, but on my porch I trembled, white with haste, to get inside and bolt the heavy door.
Recently, I received a gift from Mr. William E. Hart, the narrator of H.P. Lovecraft's Fungi from Yoggoth, and a bunch of other poems. This is produced and distributed by Fennigan and Bremer out of Chicago. Chicago Street, Napa, Idaho. Okay, so let me just specify that. Okay, cool. So this came out a couple years back, and it took me a while to track down a CD player, and then when I did, the disc, there was something wrong with the disc, but Will was cool enough to send me out another copy. I listened to it. It's snowing again. Oh my god, it's snowing again. Okay. And this is wonderful. This is really good. If you're stuck inside on a snowy day, drinking whiskey and coffee, or cocoa and cocoa, this would be a nice, fun, atmospheric, fun thing, or a nice stormy day out at the coast, or a long car ride or something. I really want to recommend this. This is wonderful. It has Fungi from Yoggoth, Despair, Festival, Halloween in a Suburb, and a Sequestered Providence Churchyard, where once Poe walked, Nemesis. On reading Lord Dunsany's Book of Wonder, The Ancient Track, The Messenger, The Outpost, To a Dreamer, and yeah, no, there's some, it's pretty cool stuff. There's notes by S.D. Joshi here. And definitely pick this up. Definitely pick this up. I believe it's like under $15. And I'm not 100% sure if Fennigan and Bremer has a, not PDF, MP4 that you can download, MP3, an audio file of some sort to download for this. Because it is definitely worth getting. But unless you're over the age of 50, I don't know if you have a CD player anymore. It took me a while, and then I realized, oh, I can just use this thing that I have here next to me called a PlayStation 4. And it worked fine, but yes. So, pick it up, listen to it, enjoy it, and have a wonderful time listening to H.P. Lovecraft's Fungi from Yawgoth. And William Hart's really good. Graham Plowman's music is tremendous. This is a really, really, really fun, wonderful, spooky, atmospheric, super cool CD. Just pick it up and love it. And, you know, I don't know. Get it? I just wish this was on MP4 because I had to, like, juggle the CD from one computer to another computer to another computer so I could just get it onto my headset so I could listen to it, because I don't own a CD player, portable CD player, and I just have a iTunes iPod player guy. But anyway, yeah, pick it up. Really, really pick it up. My only gripe is that one thing, but yeah, it's really good.
Anything else you need, Dad?
Long live the sticker cult.
Long live the sticker cult. How about stay squiggly and keep it weird?
Peace in the Middle East.
War in the Central Cook. All right, thank you for listening to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We've been Seraphie and Daniel Spitzer.
Woo-hoo!
And we'll see you next time. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos has been edited and produced by D.B. Spitzer. Audio by D.B. Spitzer and Sarah Fee. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Listen to that beautiful music that you've heard all
so
episode. This is my favorite part right here.
Fucking an apple pie. You want to see it too. You want to see the pie take it real good.
So that part's totally not going in.
Aww.